Camp starts in a week, and one of the biggest questions that the team has to answer is who will be in the starting lineup. On today's show, we look at the forward position, go through the top options, and look at the field of possibilities on the roster, the pros and cons, and what you need to know to get ready for the start of the season. All that and more on today's Locked On Heat.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It's a Monday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily podcast covering all things Miami Heat. However, you may be listening or watching on YouTube, Odyssey, or your favorite podcast app. Thanks so much for making us your first listen every day. I'm David O'Mill, and with me, as always, is my co-host Wes Goldberg. With Heat training camp just a few days away, we'll be ramping up our coverage, asking the big questions you need answers to make sure to subscribe to the show to ensure you get everything you need every day. Training camp will be held in the Bahamas this year, Wes. As per a news release from the team last week, Media Day will be held on September 26th, and then the team will travel to the Bahamas for a week.
What do you think about that? Locked On Podcast Network stipend news, bad to come news. In to get us to book us the place at the. It's not the Atlantis this year, right? It's somewhere else. Yeah. But yeah,
Bahamas.
Right. Yeah, would have been nice. Would have been nice. Good for them.
Yeah, I'm surprised we don't get the Locked On private jet, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they gave it to John Corrales, the Celtics. It's like, ridiculous. I don't know why he keeps getting this stuff.
Oh, so make the Eastern Conference Finals. If only Jimmy had hit that shot, that would be our jet. That's all I know. But on today's show, we'll be looking at the power forward position specifically. Or, you know, maybe we're calling it the power forward, but it's kind of just basically the other forward spot. Because we know at least three members of the starting lineup, right? It'll be Kyle Lowry, it'll be Jimmy Butler, and Bam Adebayo. The other two spots kind of up for grabs. So on today's episode, we'll be looking at presumably the other forward position. Who are the best options on the roster? Give the pros and cons, and then open it up to the field because there are other players on this roster that could potentially step up. But we'll go through that and then give our final predictions at the end of the show as to who may in fact wind up starting at the other forward position. But we'll start off with the most likely or what seems like the most obvious choice. Well, I mean, it's hard to say, really. From what we've heard from team sources and other reporters that have talked about this before, it seems like Caleb Martin might be the starting forward playing alongside Jimmy Butler there. So let's just get into it. I know you've got some statistics that kind of back this up. As far as pros are concerned regarding Caleb Martin, a little undersized, a feisty defender, but at the same time, a capable three-point shooter, athletic, can switch on defense. We saw that last year when he was a off and on starter and a big time member of the rotation. What do you think? What do you think Caleb Martin has a legitimate chance to start?
I think he has the inside track to start at that forward spot opposite Jimmy Butler for sure. Like you said, based on people we've talked to around the team, based on what the beat reporters are reporting, Caleb Martin, it feels like it's his job to lose. Now, I'll admit, I have been low on Caleb Martin starting at the four. Now, I don't know that Miami has any of the better options since PJ Tucker walked away, and I really thought they screwed up, quite frankly, by not going and getting a real four to start opposite Jimmy Butler in the front court next to, obviously, Bam Adebayo, too. But I've done, a stat dive, and I've went back over the last few days and watched a lot of film. And I got to be honest, David, I've done a 180 on this. I think Caleb Martin can actually be a pretty good option there at the four. The more that I look into it, just first of all, some quick numbers. He played 1,430 possessions at power forward last year, more than he's ever played at that spot in his career, and essentially was the backup four behind PJ Tucker last year. So obviously, logging a lot of minutes. In those minutes with Caleb at that four spot, the Heat posted an offensive rating of 111.5, ho-hum, kind of middle of the pack, not bad, not terrible, but not great. And a defensive rating of 107.6, which would have ranked fourth in the NBA. That was actually better than Miami's overall defensive rating for the season. Not better than just when the starters were in with PJ Tucker, but a really good defensive rating. And then a net rating, they outscored opponents by 3.9 points per 100 possessions when Caleb Martin was playing that four spot. Now, it's a pretty chunky sample size, 1,400 possessions. That's a pretty chunky sample size. And we'll get into this more, but you look at the film and you look at some of the other numbers with him, guarding other power forwards, guarding other big men. I think he could do it. I think he can do it. And my whole thing this entire time was, okay, you're 6'5". I know PJ Tucker was 6'5", but he was so much bigger. Right?
Definitely.
Tucker was 245. Caleb Martin's listed at 205. And I just didn't think it would work because you're already undersized at that spot anyway. But, you know, he uses leverage well. The numbers, it's a small sample size, but there's indications that he can actually guard other power forwards. We can get into it, David. I think offensively there's a lot of interesting things that we can carve into. So, like, what do we want to talk about? Do we want to talk about the offensive end or the defensive end first?
Let's start with the offensive end, because I think that's a quicker discussion there. I think, you know, obviously much more mobile than P.J. Tucker was, although P.J. showed flashes of having that floater game and ability to drive towards the rim and things of that sort. You know that Caleb's going to finish at a high level because he's just an acrobatic dunker. So that's certainly a plus in Caleb's favor. I think he's a slightly better three-point shooter, although P.J. had the numbers earlier in the season. But I think that'll continue to improve as he gets more comfortable, especially if he gets that starting role too. So I think we could probably see an uptick from him as an offensive player. I don't know what else there is. Like, I think, and on terms of offense, maybe he doesn't have the same recognition as a P.J. Tucker. I don't think he's necessarily a good passer. I don't think he's looking to pass either. When he gets the ball in his hands, he's probably going to drive to the hoop or you know, just take the shot at that opportunity there. So the offense is probably going to become somewhat stagnant. They'll probably have him positioned out in the corner, similarly to what we saw P.J. Tucker do for
well,
most
I want to talk about that.
Well,
the corners are really interesting because P.J. Tucker took 172 corner threes last year. Caleb Martin took only 30. And we've seen in Spoelstra's offense, whether it's Jay Crowder, P.J. Tucker, like that four player, his whole job on offense is to space the floor for Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo in the middle of the court. So they're basically just parked in the corner for the most part. Now, obviously, P.J. showed some stuff off the dribble, but his starting position is always in the corner. And that's where most of his offense is gonna come from. I think Caleb Martin is a more dynamic three-point shooter. Like P.J. Tucker's numbers from the corner are elite and have been for a very, very long time. Caleb Martin's a better three-point shooter from other places on the court, right? He's got that above-the-break three. He shot 41% from three-point range last year. He took, like I said, only 30 shots from the corner. Only 30 three-point attempts Caleb Martin took last year from the corners. He made them at a 40% clip, but he only took 30 of them. So my thing is, is Spoelstra going to park him in the corner where he can make that shot? I have no doubt he can make that corner three. Or is he going to let him kind of do a little bit more? Because I do think offensively he can do a little bit more than P.J. Tucker and even Jay Crowder could do.
Maybe I'm misremembering, but to me, if I think back at what Caleb's positioning was in the corner, it almost always wound up resulting in a baseline drive to a dunk and or a layup. Like, he always seemed to have a knack for finding that angle there. If he was open from the corner, and that means there was probably a defender out of place there, it was basically catch, and there were some times, again, that I'm probably misremembering that the ball sailed past him because he was already diving towards the basket. Like, his eyes would light up and go, you know what? I'm going to finish this with a flush. You know, I'm going to dunk it through. So to me, that's what I remember about him. It's like, he's not taking that corner three as often because, you know what? He's got that baseline open. And if he gets that baseline open, all it takes is a couple steps for him to sky over somebody.
That's why his field goal percentage is so high. So when Caleb was on the court, Miami's offensive overall, their field goal percentage overall was higher when Caleb Martin was on the court too. And like you said, I think because the nature of the shots that he takes, I think Spoelstra will figure out ways to get Caleb Martin involved more than just, hey, start in the corner, either attack the closeout with the baseline drive or to shoot the three. I just think that there's enough there above the break. I think there's enough there off the dribble a little bit. I think he's got a little bit more bounce in his step than P.J. Tucker and obviously Jay Crowder has.
Not saying much, but yes.
Right, correct. But I think he's a capable offensive player, and I think if offensively you're able to play with a little bit more pace, spread the court even more with Caleb out above the break than even the corner, I just think it's going to create different looks offensively that Miami, quite frankly, needs, right? We saw Miami's offense stall in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think they need a few different looks, and I think Martin at the four offensively could even be an improvement over P.J. Tucker. My only issue is P.J. Tucker was such a great screener. Caleb Martin's not going to be as good of a screener as P.J. Tucker, but we also saw Bam Adebayo's screen numbers go down when P.J. Tucker came in because they were obviously using P.J. as a screener so much more often than they did the power forwards of the past. I think you can make up for the lack of screen. I think you can make up for the loss of P.J. Tucker in the screen game with just letting Bam do it more. And I think that'll actually be better for their offense because now you got Bam as a role man more often, obviously the dribble handoffs and all these things. So Caleb Martin's not going to replace P.J. as a screener, but I think Bam could just hold his own there. Defensively,
so I'm seeing nothing. I'm seeing nothing but pros on offense then, and in terms of like, it might even be a slight upgrade over P.J. Tucker offensively. So
yeah,
I
think the only loss would be like offensive rebounding, right? P.J. Tucker was a good offensive rebounder for his position. But yeah, I think Caleb Martin, whatever.
Caleb's not bad either. Like, no, with his athleticism.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I think it's going to be an improvement offensively. I really do. Defensively is the big concern, though.
That's the issue.
And so let's look at the numbers. I'll start here. Like I said, he played 22% of his minutes last season at power forward. Again, a career high. Here are his numbers when he's guarding big men. So when Caleb Martin was defending players in post-ups, he actually ranked in the 94th percentile as a post-up defender last year. That's elite. I don't have to explain that to people. That's elite. Now, granted, it was only 26 possessions for the entire season. So a very, very small sample. A very small sample. But I'll get into the film a little bit more in a second here. Guarding roll men in the pick and roll, he ranked in the 81st percentile. So again, almost an elite number there. So when he's kind of getting switched onto bigger guys, he more than holds his own. In a small sample, he's been elite in those things. Just for comparison's sake, when you look at his perimeter defensive numbers, Caleb Martin guarding isolations, 50th percentile. Fine, not great, not bad, could get better. Guarding the pick-and-roll ball handler, like we saw him do against the Hawks. He was always guarding Trae Young, regular season, postseason. 91st percentile. Fine, good, but not and a bigger sample size, but not 81st percentile on roll men, not 94th percentile against post-ups. David, I went back into the film, and I saw Caleb Martin hold his own against Al Horford in the conference finals, against Pascal Siakam in regular season matchups against Toronto, against Evan Mobley against the Cavaliers, guys who are so much bigger and stronger than him. And one of the things that I noticed is he just doesn't give like an inch. He doesn't give a foot. When those guys are trying to establish post position, he uses his body in a really he uses his leverage, as much leverage leaning as he has. He puts his legs into him. You could tell that Caleb Martin has a lot of lower leg strength, lower body strength, because he's able to just push his body into guys and keep them out of their spots that they're trying to get to. And then he just contests shots. He's got a 6'10" wingspan. He's super athletic, a high flyer offensively. That translates defensively. He's able to get up and contest shots even when taller guys are trying to shoot over him. I think Caleb Martin can hold his own as a four. It's a small sample. The numbers are a small sample. But the film shows me a guy who can do it.
I mean, we're looking at somebody who's just basically got to start the game, too. I think he doesn't necessarily have to play a bulk of minutes. What did PJ average in terms of his overall minutes? You know, not much. I know he wasn't always an option there.
30?
With second units. 30 minutes per game? That seems like a little high. I don't even know that Caleb would get that many minutes per game. But either way, I just if he's going to start, he just basically has to be able to hold his own. And this isn't the 90s anymore. There's no Sean Kemp. There's no Karl Malone out there. Bam is your starting center and a good one at that at 6'9". There are very, very few options at forward that are so powerful.
28
and
minutes
you mentioned
PJ
probably
Tucker,
one of the biggest
sorry.
In Al Horford. Yeah. Yeah. So Horford, Durant.
Horford, Grant Williams, Milwaukee, they've got Giannis, Bobby Portis, Brooke Lopez. Philly's got Tobias Harris, who is huge. Toronto's got Siakam. Atlanta's got John Collins.
Tobias Harris is huge?
Tobias Harris is, he's like 6'10", isn't he? And like 250. That guy's enormous.
I think he's like 6'7", 235. Yeah. I don't know where, maybe we're wrong here. But I mean, look, LeBron James, these guys are all going to come and double teams anyway. And nobody's going to be able to guard them. This isn't a one-on-one player. Like, you're not going to defend him one-on-one. Unless you're probably going to put Bam on those guys anyway.
Well, that's
Bam's
one thing defensively where
Bam's going to play
someone KD.
That's going
to be the biggest
LeBron.
Loss. I think Caleb Martin's going to be able to switch, like, to your point. Like, there's nobody that's so enormous that you're going to worry about it. Caleb Martin also, like, Miami likes to front guys, right? Like, they try to prevent the ball from getting into these post players in the first place. And Caleb has experience doing that last year. The one place that Caleb Martin's just not going to be able to cover up for P.J. Tucker. And by the way, I'm not saying Caleb Martin is going to be as good as P.J. Tucker defensively. Few players at that spot, that position are. But I think he's going to be able to hold his own, to your point. He's just got to hold his own here and there. The one thing he's not going to be able to do is switch onto centers the way that P.J. Tucker was able to. I think Caleb Martin can switch four positions. You know, we saw in the conference finals against Boston, he was guarding Derek White.
That's true.
He was guarding Grant Williams. True. He was guarding Al Horford. He could switch four positions. P.J. Tucker was able to switch five positions. And we saw P.J. Tucker in the semifinals against the Sixers. When Joel Embiid started giving Miami problems, what the Heat did was actually switch P.J. Tucker instead of Bam Adebayo. They put Tucker onto Embiid, which freed up Bam to be more of a double-team kind of rover guy, and that kind of flipped the series the second time in Miami's favor in that series. Caleb Martin's never going to be able to do that. Caleb can't guard Embiid. He can't guard Brooke Lopez. He can't guard other centers. It's just not going to happen. But that's just going to put more on Bam Adebayo's plate. And by the way, if Bam is a perennial defensive player of the year candidate. I know he's undersized even at that position, but but he should be able to guard other centers. Just going to put more on Bam. You know, it's, and I think that's maybe what we're getting to. Like, defensively, Caleb Martin could do some of the things that P.J. Tucker did, but Bam's also going to have to step up in order to replace P.J. Tucker on defense.
So that's a pretty good case in Caleb's favor. Again, maybe the inside track, as you said, to the power forward position there, and he has some strengths and some weaknesses. I mean, I don't anticipate him bulking up significantly. He's not going to show up to camp 20 pounds heavier, nothing that's sustainable anyway. So he's going to have to find a way. And right now it seems like he might be the most logical option. But we'll talk about another option, somebody who's already in the starting lineup who might just have to slide over a spot in the next segment before getting into our final predictions on who might actually wind up taking over the starting position. But before we do that, just wanted to tell you a little bit about Rocket Money. Are you wasting money on subscriptions? 80% of people have subscriptions they forget about. Maybe it's for you, it's an unused Amazon Prime account or a Hulu account that never gets streamed. This is a great app I use that helps me track all of my expenses. And because of it, I no longer waste money. I've heard of it. It's called Rocket Money, formerly known as Truebill. The app shows all of your subscriptions in one place and cancels what you don't want for you. Rocket Money can even find subscriptions you don't know you were paying for. You may find out that you've been double charged for a subscription. And to cancel a subscription, all you have to do is press cancel. It's that easy. And Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Cancel unnecessary subscriptions with Rocket Money today. Go to rocketmoney.com/lockedon. That's one word. Seriously, it could save you hundreds per year. That's rocketmoney.com/lockedon.
Back here with Locked On Heat. Listen, we're seeking a volunteer with audio and video production experience to help produce the show during Media Day on September 26th, next Monday. This person will accompany us to Miami Heat Media Day in person. Must be punctual, reliable, available for the full day. It is a long day of work. But if you're interested in this opportunity, again, if you have any experience in audio and visual production, please send us an email with your qualifications and reason for applying at lockedonheat@gmail.com. A great opportunity that, if you're qualified, I think you'll really appreciate. But, David, we wanted to talk about the power forward options here, and you hinted at it before. Maybe somebody that's already in the starting lineup. I know it's a name that's been out there. It's one we should be talking about. Jimmy Butler, should he just play the power forward spot? Because if you go down the roster among the rotation guys, 6'7", 230, obviously played the power forward spot last year in small ball lineups. Should the Heat just start small and start games with Jimmy at the four?
I'm starting to think it's much more realistic of an option. Look, for all the strength of our case for Caleb Martin, that he's a strong defender, his body, its leverage, and all these things, Jimmy is that plus a better version of that, too. He's also 25 pounds heavier, at least his listed weight is at 230 pounds. We know he's in great shape. We don't want to put additional wear and tear on him, but this isn't, like I said before, this isn't the 90s. You're not running into the same level of power forwards that you once did. And given that, I think Jimmy is certainly a strong option. You're going to probably require some other strength in terms of defense and other things in the starting lineup. We'll talk about that when we look at the shooting guard position in tomorrow's episode. But for now, at least, I think Jimmy is certainly more than capable. And the number that I point out to is 81%, which is the percentage of time that DeMar DeRozan, who's 10 pounds lighter than Jimmy Butler, listed at power forward last year for the Chicago Bulls. And that was a pretty good Bulls team that wound up falling short towards the end of the season in the playoffs, obviously, as they were overcome by injury. But DeRozan having an MVP type year and holding his own, he also did it in San Antonio. And I think Jimmy can certainly do it. DeRozan, not nearly the defender that Jimmy is. Now, that's taking away some of the strength of Jimmy's abilities on defense, because he's much better as a rover, a guy who can break up passes. We've seen him on multiple opportunities pick the ball on a pass and be able to just, you know, coast to an easy layup or dunk on the other end. So I think there's pros and cons there, but I certainly think it's an option.
I think there's
and
game
I think it's an option
goals
that Spoelstra
for Eric Spoelstra
will consider
that
strongly.
You need to accomplish. And I think there's season goals and kind of that perspective that you have to have. And while there's no doubt in my mind that game to game, Jimmy Butler is the best option at power forward, I think if you look at this team's goal for a season, I don't think that Jimmy Butler can start at power forward, because the idea is to do what? The idea is to win a championship for the Miami Heat, right? That's the goal going into every season. And I think if you start Jimmy at the four, I just think that's so much wear and tear on him already at 34 years old, that like by the playoffs, when we've seen how badly they need Jimmy Butler and they need him to kind of take that Super Saiyan level in the playoffs, like if you're going to put that wear and tear on him over the course of a regular season, is he going to be able to step up in that way the same way he's done over the last 2 or 3 years in the playoffs? I don't know. But I do think if they're Eric Spoelstra, it's something you need to monitor. If you're having Jimmy guard fours every single night, and I know we just kind of got through it where like, hey, you know, there's not that many big fours in the league anymore. They're still much bigger than they are against perimeter defenders. And it's still a big toll on a player's body over the course of 82 games. And so I hear you. I understand it's the best option. I do think that the Heat are going to play a lot of minutes with Jimmy Butler at the four. I just don't think that they'll start games because the teams that do have bigger guys start their bigger guys. If you could start games with somebody else pulling that assignment and keeping Jimmy from putting on that wear and tear on his body, and then eventually you get into those smaller lineups. Like last year, the Heat fixed their lineup when they started subbing, like putting Jimmy in the second half of the first quarter in small lineups, and that kind of juiced their offense. I could see it happening early. I just don't see Miami starting games with Jimmy at the four.
Yeah, my only counter to that is that I'm not so sure anymore. Like, maybe we're just kind of wired and programmed to think more wear and tear. But it's not the same game. Like, who are the legitimate bangers and bruisers of the NBA that are using their low post moves to power past Jimmy Butler? Like, Siakam has a good spin move, but he's not significantly heavier than Jimmy Butler. Durant's not exactly a banger either. He's just going to pull up over you because he's 7 foot, whatever. You know, that's just the strength of his game. Other than that, I'm just thinking they're just most forwards, and even most players of today as NBA are just perimeter based, and they'll use their speed and quickness to attack the basket. That doesn't necessarily put more wear and tear on.
I mean, if it's the difference between guarding somebody like Al Horford or Grant Williams or Robert Williams versus somebody like Jaylen Brown, I think you can make that argument that like maybe Jaylen Brown is physically more of an issue for somebody like Jimmy Butler to deal with than even an Al Horford at his age. I get it. I understand where we're going, but it's not just the body on body contact, though that's certainly part of it, because whatever, if the fours are smaller, so are the threes and so are the twos. Like, I just do think fours and fives are still bigger than the perimeter guys, and so that's just got to be something that you account for. But also, it's the rebounding. It's the defensive assignments. If you're Jimmy Butler, if you're guarding a four, chances are you having to switch onto a five are much greater than if you're guarding out on the perimeter and you're a little bit more of a rover and things like that. I do think that there is a little bit more wear and tear. And the other part, too, is, like, if you start Jimmy at the four, then who else is in that starting lineup with you? That's a really undersized team if you're already starting games small. And I know Miami is already inherently a small team just based on the fact that Bam is a small center. But I just don't know that you can start Jimmy at the four, Bam at center, and then what, three guards basically? Because then you're basically assuming that if Jimmy's starting at the four, and like we said this already, like if it's Jimmy and Caleb at the four and the three, like who, there's interchangeable forward positions. I'm assuming that by us saying Jimmy's going to start at the four, it means that Caleb is not in that starting lineup. And now you're starting some sort of combination of Kyle and Max Strus and Tyler Hero or whatever. There's three guards next to him. That's a really, really, really small starting lineup. So I just think that ultimately Eric Spoelstra will trend bigger and with the guys that he thinks. And that's why I just have a hard time seeing Jimmy at the four. But again, starting at the four, I think Jimmy's going to log a lot of minutes at the four. It might even be 81% like DeMar DeRozan. Who knows? Like, I don't know. I just don't think they'll start games with him at the four.
Yeah. Are there any other pros and cons worth getting into? Like, we know what Jimmy can do. Right. There's no X factor there. So it's just a matter of whether or not they're willing to take that risk of putting his body at additional risk and maybe incur some additional wear and tear there. He's not going to change in terms of what he does offensively, defensively. There would be issues about whether or not he's going to have to switch more onto bigger bigs. And that being the case, maybe that puts him in a little bit more vulnerable position.
I mean, offensively,
we've seen Jimmy handle that challenge for the most
offensively,
part.
Offensively, yeah. To me, is the most interesting thing because we saw Miami's offense just spring alive when you had Jimmy at the four with three other shooters and Bam. Like, I could see that. Like, if Miami really wants to tilt things offensively, that could be really interesting. If you play Jimmy Butler at the four and you've got three shooters around him and Bam Adebayo, who's able to, you know, be a facilitator and a screener and all those kinds of things, like, that to me is a really interesting thing. But that's again why I think we'll see a lot of Jimmy at the four, is to get into those offensive sets. Should we talk about some other options too?
Yeah, I think it's worth getting into. possibly in the next segment, we'll look at some of the other options on the roster, because there are a couple of names that could get some minutes here and there if they wind up not putting Jimmy at the four or even inserting Caleb Moore into the starting lineup. So make sure to stay tuned here on Locked On Heat. Thanks for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. Just a reminder, you can always reach us via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag #GaskellHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and, as always, leave a review. Look, this is a question that I think will kick off our discussion here. This one comes in from Billy, who's been a longtime listener and supporter of the show. With such a weak power forward position, could rookie Nikola Jovic play the Luke Babbitt role 5 to 10 minutes a game as a starter, and then you bring in Martin against the opposing bench's power forward, and Jimmy Bam could fill out the rest of the minutes in the rotation? It's a small role, but if he can be a floor spacer, then that would be good experience to get his development going and eat some open minutes. I see where Billy's going with that, and I agree that it's a small role, something he could just eat through and just kind of build more and more experience. I just think the stakes have changed for this team. They can't afford to just put, I mean, if Babbitt was on this roster, he wouldn't get any playing time whatsoever. Right. Like, and I know that Myers Leonard inhabited that role to some degree a couple of seasons ago when the stakes were still a little bit higher, but that's a competent NBA veteran. That's not Luke Babbitt. Like, he was, Myers was starting the first and third quarter. Not a knock on Luke. I mean,
it is a knock on Luke. NBA, I love that. Somehow Luke Babbitt got thrown under the bus in our power forward discussion. And by the way, I love Billy's question here, and I get it where he's coming from, but the Heat also did not draft Nikola Jovic hoping he could be the next Luke Babbitt either.
Yeah, that's probably not their goal on using a lottery pick. Yeah, you're right.
Love Luke Babbitt. Anyway, I don't think Jovic can do it. I don't think is ready. It's a good point you make. No. Like, Babbitt probably doesn't play any rotation minutes for this team now. It's much different than when it was Derek Williams and James Johnson and Luke Babbitt at that four spot,
right,
next to somebody like Hassan Whiteside. But I just don't think there's no reason to rush Jovic into this, right? Like size wise, yeah, he's taller, but he's listed at the same weight as Caleb Martin is. They're both listed at 205. And defensively, he's just not ready. Offensively, he's still really raw. There's no reason to throw him in to the fire right now. There's no reason. I still think, as limited as Miami's options are, there's still better options at that four spot without risking Jovic's future, his confidence, and all these things. They drafted Jovic as a long-term project. They had a plan in place for his development. I think they'll stick to it.
I agree. I think he'll get some occasional minutes. Basically, the Yurt 7 rotation piece last year, anything. And I don't think he's even going to get that starting role that Yurt 7 earned when Bam was out due to injury, too. Right. So I would say Jovic probably averages no more than 5 minutes a game, and probably every other game will be a DNPCD at least. So, we can hope for the best, but he's not a starter-level player yet. However, there is also the possibility of Haywood Highsmith, who seems like he might be another option at the power forward spot. Certainly a little bit bigger and bulkier than some of the other options, although his height is somewhat debatable. Depending on the source, you can see him listed anywhere from 6'4 to 6'7, roughly about 225, 230. So a little bit stronger than Caleb Martin, maybe not much taller. But certainly a guy who's played the four spot before, can't stretch the floor. We saw him take some threes. His per 36 numbers were okay in terms of rebounding and things of that sort. And again, you'll probably just wind up camping him out in a 3-point shot there. Do you see him as a legitimate option to start at the four?
I do. I think when we're talking about, we're sort of previewing training camp next week right now, and I think that four spot is an open competition. I think Caleb Martin, like I just said, has the inside track because he already has Eric Spoelstra's trust. But what this front office saw from Haywood Highsmith in Summer League, they came away really impressed. I remember talking to Haywood on this show last year and asking him, like, what are they trying to teach you? How are they developing you? And he mentioned, like, they're trying to make me P.J. Tucker 2.0. Like, they show me film of P.J., and they're trying to put me in those positions. And so, obviously, there's already been an idea that Haywood Highsmith could potentially replace P.J. Tucker down the line. If you're looking at somebody who could be sort of the Max Strus of this season, big-time Summer League, carves out a rotation role, and then by the end of the year is somehow starting, like, Haywood Highsmith would be the best bet on the Heat roster to be that guy, right? Great Summer League, super impressed. The front office and the coaches are super impressed by him, and I think he's going to have an opportunity to earn minutes. Maybe he's the backup for, maybe he's not starting, but I think he's going to get a lot of minutes at that power forward spot. He's going to get a chance to earn it, and I don't think that I think Heat fans should pay attention to Haywood Highsmith this season.
Quick pros. I mean, again, body's somewhat ready there. Yeah. Competent three-point shooter, has a little bit of experience. Cons, not much experience, so you're kind of putting him out there in the fire. Not to the same level as Jovic. Obviously, this is an NBA guy who's played at the NBA level already, and not much of an offensive repertoire there, right. So a little bit.
And no idea how tall he is. No idea what his height is. It's so strange.
Also a con there. We'll find out on Media Day and ask him specifically how tall he is.
Well, I did ask him. I asked him on the show, and he said, yeah, I'm somewhere in between. I was like, all right, great. Good answer. Thanks for that.
How the hell are you somewhere in between, dude? You're like in the NBA. They measure you every other day. What's going on here? I'm sorry. This is ridiculous. I'm somewhere between. Hey, man, I'm somewhere between 6'2 and 6'5. You figure it out, all right? I'll let you guys determine how tall
the cons is. Just that he's a mystery box. We don't know what his height is, and we have actually no idea if he could play the position consistently at the NBA level, right? We have no idea. It's one thing to do it in summer league. It's one thing to be developed this way in practice behind the scenes. We have no idea. He didn't play a lick in the playoffs. We have no. He barely played against starters, if at all. We have just no idea. That's what I'm saying. Like it's gonna. He's gonna have to have a huge training camp to even get that job away from Caleb Martin, or even kind of carve out minutes and that's in the rotation. But but one other thing I think is just underrated about how I like his feel. There's just things there. Like he's on the court. He seems to know what to do. I like him. I like him as a project, and it's just somebody I would keep an eye on. Can I give you one more name? One more name for power forward.
Is it the galaxy-brained option that we're going to explore now?
I think it is. I think it's time to talk about Duncan Robinson. I think yes. It's time to talk about Duncan Robinson at the four. You brought this up, I think, a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Bojan Bogdanović as a potential option. I can't remember if we were even on air. I think maybe it was just you and me talking. But Bogdanović, a legit four in the NBA, three-point shooter, not very great defensively, 6'7", 220, 230, wherever he's listed. Duncan Robinson's probably not as big, like bulky as Bogdanović is, but he's also 6'7". He's also an elite three-point shooter, and he's also not very good defensively. So if you're trying to debate whether or not the Heat should trade for Bojan Bogdanović, maybe you just try to spin Duncan Robinson into that four spot a little bit and just see what happens. Because the other thing, too, is the Heat need to play Duncan Robinson minutes. They got to find minutes for him. I truly believe that Duncan Robinson is going to have a much better season this coming season than he did last year. But the only way to do that is to get on the court. And that perimeter rotation is pretty much set. We don't know who's going to start and everything, but we kind of know the guys. And it's kind of hard to imagine where Duncan Robinson gets his minutes. But if you start him at that four spot, first of all, incredible three-point shooter, right? He's going to space the floor more than any of the other options that we're talking about by far.
Legitimately, yeah.
And you know, yeah, he couldn't really guard other perimeter guys. He's a little slow-footed. Maybe that's less of an issue guarding fours.
Perfect.
Right? And so I think the fouling is going to be an issue either way, but the fouling's an issue either way. Doesn't matter if he's guarding twos or he's guarding fours. So that's not even a conversation worth having. I don't know. I'd be interested to see if they at least try it. There's weirder things. Weirder things have happened. Remember, we saw Eric Spoelstra take Shane Battier, a career shooting guard, and play him at the four next to LeBron and Chris Bosh, obviously. It's a little bit different. But could you try to do something similar with Duncan Robinson? I wonder.
All right, refresh my memory here. I'm trying to think. When Duncan was in that starting lineup last year, it was PJ. So he was playing ostensibly the two guard spot.
Yes.
So you're going to – So he was often on the mismatch there. Like he can't handle wing players and ball handlers that are sufficiently quicker than he is. Like he may maybe have his moments here and there defensively, but he's just not suited for that. Now if you've got him at the forward spot – now, are you going to do the same thing, though, where you're going to attack him on defense? Are you going to try to get that switch and then leave him on an island? Well, that being the case, it's not in a position that he hasn't been in before, so maybe he's a little bit more capable. He might not be the same kind of level defender as a Caleb Martin or even a Highsmith if he shows consistency at that point. But at least there's experience there, and I mean, you want him to be capable, able to at least understand his role on defense. So that's something that Duncan gives.
He switched onto fours.
I don't necessarily see it.
He switched onto fours quite a bit last year. I don't know if that was more of a function of Miami trying to hide him defensively. Because at the end of the day, look, if Duncan Robinson is on the court, he's going to get targeted no matter what. If he's guarding twos, all right, you're going to run 1-2 pick and roll. If he's guarding fours, the opponent's going to run 1-4 pick and roll. If he's guarding centers for some reason, they're going to run 1-5 pick and roll. They're just every time Duncan's on the court, he's going to be attacked. But if he's playing the four spot next to three other perimeter-based players, and offensively you're good enough where you're able to just play these guys off the court, maybe that's the idea. I don't know. I just Look, I have no information on this. I haven't asked anybody for the Heat whether or not they're going to experiment with Duncan Robinson at the four. But just looking at the depth chart, looking at the way, looking at their priorities, looking at the things that they need to try to accomplish, I would be surprised if they at least didn't experiment with it in training camp. And we probably will never know if they do it or not. But I would, I think they'll at least think about it. Is just my best guess.
They'll explore the option there. I think having him out there, then you kind of need to take a different serious look at the two guard spot.
That's
there
true.
Because you're going to need somebody that provides a higher level of defense. Because if you have him out there and Tyler Hero, who we see as a probable starter next season, that might not be the best option.
That's
either.
A really so good point.
You might have to lead to Victor Oladipo starting. Maybe even Max Strus could get that nod too. But if you've got that 3-point shooting out there, I don't know. It's an interesting question. Yeah. Certainly not an easy
one. I don't think they would bench Tyler in order to start Duncan Robinson. I don't think that. But maybe we're focused too much on who starts. Even though I know that's sort of the thesis of this episode, but. Sure. Maybe Duncan Robinson can log minutes at that four spot. Even if it's Caleb Martin or Jimmy Butler, whoever's starting at the four, maybe we could see Duncan Robinson slotting in a few minutes there in second units where maybe it's less of an issue. I don't know. I have no idea. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't think anybody does either. Like, that's the problem, is that they targeted a power forward in free agency and through their offseason acquisition of Kevin Durant, and that didn't work out. Like, he would have solved a lot of problems, you know, quite obviously. And unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. And if they had acquired either Mitchell or Durant or that superstar that they were looking to get this offseason, then you know that some other player was probably going to sign here for a veteran minimum and try and title chase and ring chase and things of that sort. And fortunately, it didn't work out that way. I guess there are other options, too, that we should mention. They could probably look at a Blake Griffin or a LaMarcus Aldridge or somebody right. else that's a Paul Millsap that's a free agent right now. But if they haven't done that already, I don't think
they're
there's
not
any chance.
And it's going to set them into the luxury tax, and they're not doing that for washed up Blake Griffin, Paul Millsap, or LaMarcus Aldridge, right? They're just not going to go into the luxury tax for those guys. So I don't see it happening. All right. We should also mention, by the way, this is a team that can make a trade. So whoever starts the season at power forward might not finish a season at power forward. They've got stackable contracts, like we've said. They still have their first round picks because they didn't make a Durant or a Mitchell deal. Maybe if these options don't pan out, this is a team that can make a move and go ahead and find a bona fide starting power forward who has experience at that position. Maybe we should end the show with this. Your prediction, who starts at power forward opening night?
Jimmy Butler.
Okay. I've got Caleb Martin.
There you go. I just think they feel more comfortable with somebody that they know, and Jimmy certainly provides it. But Caleb, if they're looking and they see a legitimate concern there, I think, for the wear and tear issue, and they want to save Jimmy for when he can go super saiyan, as you said, in the playoffs, then it's required to, you know, keep him in a position where they can keep him healthy and safe as possible, probably not at the power forward. So let us know what you think, right? Write in our comments. Give us your choice if there's another option there. Obviously, we could have looked at going big option. We just don't think it's realistic. Like, we considered that. We were discussing it before the show. Could they start Omer Yurtseven? Could they start Dwayne Dedman? Could they slide Bam down to the four? They haven't done it. They're not going to. I know they did it a couple of seasons ago with Myers Leonard. I just don't think Yurtseven or Dedman are legitimate options at this point in time. Not yet. Now, again, that could change in training camp or could change over the course of the season. But for right now, it doesn't seem like that's the realistic option. They feel comfortable with Bam at the five. He's been an all-NBA defender there. He continued to be so next year. And I think both of us are in agreement about that moving forward. But thanks again for making Locked On Heat your first listen. Now go and make the NBA Top 50 on Locked On NBA your second listen. Which NBA player moves the betting line the most this season? Locked On and the Bet Online odds makers present the NBA Top 50 Most Valuable Players. You can find it on Locked On NBA wherever you get your podcast and on YouTube. This is David Ramil. Thanks for joining me. Signing off for now. Thanks so much for joining me.
Wrap it up, B.